Right, this is the Community Development Committee meeting for Monday, September 9th. It's 5:15 PM. And we have in the room
David Ramstead.
Sean Metzke.
Kathy Schwantes.
Brian Grummets.
Sarah Swedberg.
Fernando Alvarado.
And Vicki Davis. We have no one from the public here, so there's no public comment. And our topic this evening is the tax abatement agreement with AEHM LLC.
Correct. Thank you, Chair. This AEHM actually stands for, what's the name of it?
The Sweet Living Apartments.
Sweet Living Apartments. Right, and this is a revision, similar to the revisions that we've done with the other TIF deals. And with that, I'm just going to pass it right over to Sarah.
Sounds good. So just for some clarification or for kind of point of reference, the map included is up on 15th Avenue Northwest, just west of Ridgewater College, right in the northeast corner of College View Development. For those of you familiar, there are two apartment buildings currently up there, formerly known as the Sunwood Apartments. And as Dave alluded to, Sweet Living has purchased this property. It used to be three parcels. They have now combined it into one. And they will be building an additional 24-unit apartment complex on that site. The two buildings that are currently there are 12-unit complexes and a part of a PUD from 1976. Two of the three that were planned were built. And then back in 2018, or earlier this year actually, the Planning Commission approved this new 24-unit apartment complex, which required an amendment to that PUD for that more intense density there on that site. So that being said, the City Council reviewed the application for tax abatement for this property, only for the taxes for the new building, not for the any increase in tax revenues from renovations of the two existing properties. And the council approved the tax abatement for 10 years at 90% of that increased tax base. So from that approval, we need just a slight amendment to the resolution that was adopted. There were a couple of clarifications that needed to be in there, and some dates slightly changed. So that's the first item that's on there, and included are those slight changes that were made. The terms during the council meeting, we had decided not to make the approval of the tax abatement contingent upon the county's approval. As some of you may have seen, the county denied tax abatement for this particular property. And the way tax abatement differs from TIF is that the three taxing jurisdictions are separate in a tax abatement. So the school district, the county, and the city all have separate jurisdiction to approve or deny. And that can be contingent. It does not have to be. So we took that out of that resolution. That was not caught before signatures. And then to go with the tax abatement, there's also an agreement that has to be approved by council. And that really just details that that it protects you for saying that we're going to give you this tax abatement, and therefore we're requiring that you complete that 24-unit apartment complex construction, have insurance during the process, that those kind of contingencies in there. Unlike other tax abatements, sometimes there's a job creation requirement or something like that. Because this is that housing tax abatement, we don't have to have that in there. This is simply to complete that project and have it be a completed building. So that being said, I will pass it back.
And I just want to add that it is under construction right now. It's a $1.9 million deal, and it's estimated to be done in April of 2020.
It looks like most of the external frame of it's already up.
Yep.
The contingency thing on the county, there's actually no requirement for the developer to even ask the county or the school.
Correct.
There's three governmental entities, and the developer can ask one, two, or three. Now there's benefits if they get denied. Then they can go longer and that, like on the city, but if the developer says, I'm not even going to ask the school, I just don't want to, and I don't want to ask the county, they don't have to. So it's really just a, from the city's perspective, real simple, it's a yes or no. You wouldn't want to get into contingent upon the county doing it. It's just not part of the law.
That's in terms of an abatement. Does that differ from a TIF? TIF
have
to have
all... Exactly opposite. Yeah, and you know, Sarah can reinforce this, but TIF is one-stop shop. You get TIF, you get everybody.
Right.
Where tax abatement, you can say, I just want the counties to be abated and go ask them. You don't even have to ask the city. You can whichever governmental entity you want. But TIF is all or nothing.
Mm-hmm. And with TIF comes certain requirements that money can only be used for, you know, certain improvement components of a project. So it might be extension of utilities, or it might be acquisition of land or something like that, whereas tax abatement just has less strings attached to it.
Right. The beauty of it was that TIF, because you got all of the taxes, was the one to capture because you get all the money. Well, they tightened up TIF, and all of a sudden they start looking at this other program, and all of a sudden abatement came into play. Oh, we have abatement here, and now they're, you know, they've shifted from their toolbox. They use that tool, and now that tool's not as nice to use, so now they're going, you see everybody going to abatement now. Very rarely do you see TIF.
Brian, can I get your perspective? This has nothing to do with this particular thing, but I've watched abatements and TIFs unroll out at this, in the city here, and most of the time, abatements were used for projects that would generate jobs. Housing projects were usually using TIF, and we've kind of had it set up that way. I realize that the policies we have in place afford this. Is there, your perspective, any reason to go back and examine the practice Wilmer has used and put that into policy, explore making it work that way, or is this a thing we need in the toolbox to allow us to do that?
You need it in the toolbox, because what happened was, like all things that the state creates, here's a program. And 5 years later, a company uses that program. I'm gonna take McDonald's. And they go, this was never designed for McDonald's. Tax increment financing for a McDonald's, are you crazy? So they tightened up the rules. And after about 25, 30 years of this going on, every year they're looking at the legislation, they tighten up the rules. Pretty soon they went from, you know, like 30-year TIFs to now 7.5. 8-year TIFs, and now the developers can't capture the funds that they needed to get the project done. So abatement, sitting in a different part of the chapter, economic toolbox, was sitting there because you didn't capture as much money up front. That was the lesser of the tools. Well, now that they've squeezed TIF down to such a short period of time and made it hard to do, you can't do it in these situations, now tax abatement is the go-to tool. So it's half of one, six dozen of the other kind of scenario. I said that facetiously. It's just another tool, and I think you let the development decide that TIF fits for this project and it's the one I want to use, or tax abatement fits for this project. Just let them decide. I wouldn't get into saying, oh, we only do this for jobs. I wouldn't do that.
It is how we had practiced it.
Yep.
Here for a very
Yep.
long time. And so, as a councilor, it would be very helpful to me to have some more direction in how to utilize these. My fear is if abatement is an easier thing to obtain, that will we see a floodgate now of a whole bunch of anybody who wants to do a housing development is just going to say, you go in and ask for a abatement and you're good to go. The city will roll, and I don't know if that's where we want to be. So,
well, ask yourself this question: if they came in looking to do TIF, would you help them out?
Mm-hmm.
asked and answered, then let them use the tool that best fits their particular project, because they'll do the analysis. They'll sit down and go, I can only collect this much money in this length of time, and over here, I may only get one taxing entity, but I can collect it for this length of time.
Sure.
They'll figure out which one is best for them.
But what's best for the city? You know, that's what I, you know, what's, you know, I think that's how we have to look at it. What's best for the city? You know, and I just, you know, I know we need apartments. I understand that. But at what cost do we do that? Is it equitable for the TIF people versus the abatement people? I don't know. And that's what I think we have to ask. And I understand we need housing, and every community needs it. But I think we have to look what's good for the city. I don't want a hodgepodge of everything.
I think I would just take this into consideration. That is, if you were going to give up $100,000 of taxes and reimburse the developer with a tax income and financing program, or you give up $100,000 and give that up for tax abatement, to me, that's immaterial. It's just a tool in the toolbox. You want the housing, you're going to help them, because they're not likely going to want to do it on their own. It's too big of a risk, too much money. They need to have that incentive. And you could argue the fact that, you know, if all three governmental entities said no, would they still do the project? And the answer is, it's possible. You know, so then you say, should you be really tough and only give it out in certain situations, only really needed projects? I always, I guess, recommended and looked at it as, it's a tool. You know, we've got that apartment going in because of this tool, and that's the benefit to the community. Long range, you think long range.
I would just remind us that this organization came to us very early on and said, this is what we would like to do, but before we spend all the money and all the fees on having the financials prepared, I want to make sure that this is palatable to the city. And the council said, yes, it was, proceed. And so it came back to us with the financials all done. It showed a negative cash flow without the assistance of the tax abatement, if I remember correctly. And the council again voted yes in favor of this. And so now, can you refresh what it is that the first item that's asked here is that we approve the tax abatement resolution, amending, correcting, and restating the resolution. Can you restate what those corrections and changes are?
Yeah. So right after the map would be that resolution that will correct, restate, and amend, correct, and restate the initial resolution. And so essentially, and the changes are included in there as well in the next two pages. So essentially the changes are that we take out that contingency that was left in that resolution that was originally passed, and that was a mistake on staff's end that we didn't remove that before it got signed. But it was a part of the discussion.
Number three.
that we were not going to make it contingent. So we're simply updating it to make it consistent with what was actually approved. And then the dates for that tax abatement should be 2022 through 2031 inclusive, which just makes it more clear and up to date with when they will actually get the reimbursement for the abatement there. I think, and then there were some changes. We were waiting to draft and send the agreement to council until the three parcels had been combined at the county, so that it would accurately reflect that the taxes we were abating were only from the increase in property taxes from that new building. But we had to make sure that that single parcel number was accurate with the county, so that it was accurate in the agreement as well.
So having said that, I would make a motion to approve the tax abatement resolution amending, correcting, and restating the resolution number 19-068.
Second.
Any discussion?
Again, the conversation that we are having is not pertinent to this. I'm still interested in how we're going to apply things going forward. Because as you recall, in all the conversation we had, these are the questions that we were talking about. And again, not germane to this. We thought, okay, this is completely complying with the rule, and it was a break from how we did things. But I'd like to know going forward, are we going to be consistent? And that's the only reason that it's being brought up. I am not speaking against this whatsoever, but it's something we have to address of how are we going to deal with abatements versus TIFs in the future.
Dave?
Yeah.
I'd just like to add, a good way of looking at this is kind of like as a metaphor or another perspective is think about it as like layaway. You got the property, you're getting taxes on it. So what you're going to do is you're going to put an improvement on it that the city's going to benefit from. But you're not going to get the return of the taxes that you're not getting anyway until 8 to 15 years later. So you're not losing anything. You're actually gaining. And you're helping the organization that's going to put in a pretty significant improvement in the city with their own generated taxes for an interim. So it's really sort of a layaway system.
Trying to address some of the just kind of moving forward stuff. If you'll recall as well, part of the decision to move forward with this tax abatement and that it was in compliance was that we have a tax abatement policy that was put in place. And so there was just essentially what was going on was there was a piece of that tax abatement policy that we had just never really tapped into. And so I would second Brian's thought that it's a continued tool in the toolbox, and as projects come forward that do meet that the financial need piece, because that's a component of both TIF and tax abatement. We can't just give it out to anybody who comes knocking at our door. They have to prove that financial need is there, and then also fit within. We do have that tax abatement policy, which requires them to meet specific requirements that may be a little bit different than what TIF would require. There's certain categories that you have to fit in for a project, whether it's housing or redevelopment or a couple others for TIF as well. But that policy kind of sets up our own guidelines for looking at some of those tax abatement projects that would come forward should they choose to request that.
And that's why I was looking at it, because it's like, does that policy, do we have to readdress the policy?
Yeah.
Because there is a difference whether or not in the public's eye, because I've heard about this, as at least with the TIF, you're already collecting the taxes that are already being collected, and they're paying just on the improvement piece. Where an abatement, you're maybe abating even more of the tax pieces off of the piece. Correct. So I understand layaway, but there's a difference between putting no skin in the game versus putting some minimal payments into the game. And so that's where I struggle with where is the future, because I know what the policy says. That's why I say I'm supporting this, because it's within our realm. But
yep.
It's like as we go forward, I would prefer not to, but if we call out to modify policy, or do we just find the happy way of when you look at it, you go, okay, well, this abatement, maybe even some abatements we say, you know what, maybe you're still going to pay, because I think we can write these up this way, where you're still paying on a certain piece of the base and do it, because we can write this any way we wish, so maybe that's something that can happen in the future, is that we write some of those. We're going to collect minimal pieces or where we're at for base, and then collect the other thing like the layaway plan. So.
And I will note that's exactly how this one is written. That they're the
exactly
whatever is being generated right now. It's above and beyond that.
Exactly. So and I will tell you, for me, that's much more palatable and easier to explain to people when they come with this corporate welfare concept, because I get some of that pushback.
And all of us are set up that way. Just
going to say, I don't think the city's ever done one where we have abated prior property taxes.
Right.
It's only ever been the increase,
right.
The increased amount.
And I was just going to mention that they have to prove need. They have to come with their spreadsheet and says, but for this shortfall, this project
won't happen.
And so now you're locked into a number, and then that leads to your abatement number. And literally, the city council could, if they desired, let's say somebody came in and says, I need $1 million, it's going to be 10 years long at $100,000 a year. You could say, well, that's cool, but we're only going to give you
$500,000.
Yeah. You know, you can squeeze them as much as you want to still make the project happen, but you don't have to give them you know, the bank. You can reduce that dollar figure. You have total flexibility. That's where the flexibility comes on tax abatement for the developer. It also comes as a flexible benefit for the city too, because you're not tied into such rigidity. You can say, oh, you want the money? We're going to make you work for it. We're going to, you know, you need $1 million. We're only going to give you $700,000.
And in this case, it's estimated $87,000.
Yeah.
To make sure that.
Yeah. You know, but
anybody listening to this recording doesn't have the paperwork in front of them later on.
Yeah. Each case shall have its own numbers and does not reflect, you know, my example. But the thing is, the flexibility of abatement is way greater.
Do you have a question?
What I remember in this circumstance, I was of the understanding that this was an organization that was an investment type business, and the abatement wasn't intended to allow them to have greater profits from building this for their investors. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we have to see their financials. I don't recall seeing the financials. I don't recall having it going through the EDC like some of the requirements are. So, you know, is it moving forward? Yes. But I think if we got guidelines, they're there for a purpose. And I don't know that I'm comfortable with saying that we follow the guidelines, personally.
I'm kind of.
So let me just, I'm not sure I understood. Are you asking if we follow the guidelines? Because I believe that Aaron was part of the presentation on this, that the EDC was involved in this.
But I don't believe he got the numbers supporting it. At least that's what I understood. Did he get numbers?
Well, so the EDC, here's where, typically in the past, tax abatement generally goes through the EDC because they have interest in addressing all three taxing entities. And the EDC, because of its involvement with the city and the county, is a great organization for them to go through because of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's nothing that requires them to do that. Like Brian said, they can, you know, you can address the school district solely, you could address the city solely by yourself. We just hadn't seen that that in the past.
Right.
Which is certainly something that staff encouraged them to do if they had interest in approaching the county. And I think that this particular entity, after going through the county, perhaps would have done it differently. But there's nothing in the policy that would require them to go through the EDC. Ehlers did, which is the company that we're continuing to work with for some of the TIF changes that we did and amendments. They were the ones who did provide financial numbers for this particular project. So there were financials in the packets.
And Aaron did go to the county.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Aaron went alongside with.
So it came in, but later on in the process.
Yep.
By financials, do you mean on this one building or across the board for everything they have?
It was for this particular development, yeah.
But that is the norm.
Yep.
We do not normally collect the financials for their whole company. It's would be for the project.
Correct.
And really, anyone who's doing projects this size, they're all investors, right?
Right, right. I hear what you're saying.
I have an IA question. So how do you determine financial need?
Yeah.
By that
whenever
project.
Whenever I put on the piece of paper, if I tell you I don't have enough money, then I don't.
But that's part of the reason we bring in Ehlers, we bring in financial consultants to say, their return on investment should not exceed this. Their, you know, expenses on a typical project should, the dollars per unit, per housing unit should be roughly, and they do that analysis and come on and say, yeah, their construction costs are in line, their rents are gonna generate this much, and their debt service, you know, they're short X dollars a year.
And so I was trusting that you saw all of those things. We didn't use the EDCs for this, you used someone else, but you based this on a set formula.
Yep, and Ehlers as a consultant is the same consultant that the EDC uses.
Okay.
And so there is a kind of a set list of information that we provide both the county when they come up with their estimated tax value after construction, and then provide that same for Ehlers to go through that analysis of here's how many units we're anticipating, sure, the size of those units, the type of construction, all of that sort of information.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, so since we have the motion and the second. What do I say? I forgot what I say.
Is that where we ask for a...
You said you already asked for a discussion and there isn't any more, so now you just say all those in favor
of the
motion.
All those in
favor.
Say aye.
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 And opposed. Nay? Oh, opposed? No. Then?
Moves forward.
Yeah, moves forward.
We need the second
Which is,
motion
yes.
to adopt a resolution to approve the tax abatement agreement.
So moved.
And authorize the mayor and city administrator to execute.
So moved.
Second.
Right. Any discussion?
And that is only the moving of these dates. Is that?
So the second one is that larger document that was
I understand
after
that, but
that
what
resolution.
Is, what is...
So the first one changed the resolution.
I understand that. I'm just wondering what substance. There's nothing of substantive change that we've put in there.
No, this agreement you haven't seen before.
Ah.
Yep. But this is the one that just details essentially that the building gets built. This was the one we were waiting for to get that correct parcel identification number in there, waiting for that lot combination. That they have insurance, and we have gotten, we have made contact with AEHM. They're in agreement with this document in full. The only thing we're going to change is one address that we have listed in there.
And how road and utility costs will be paid. Turn left and that kind of stuff?
That's a different project.
That's a different project?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, 2025.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
That
sorry.
One's done. That well, one's done and over with.
But all the terms that we had already discussed before
yep.
are memorialized in here.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. That motion passes.
Great. So. Chair, if there's no other business, I'd like to give an update.
Sure.
So I sent the NFIP application to the DNR today, and they will be forwarding it to FEMA for final adoption. So we should be officially in the program in the next few weeks, I would think. Department continues to search for a permit technician clerk position. We're hopefully going to have a few interviews next week. And we had chosen a candidate last round, but she decided not to pursue the position. Which was kind of a blow, so we're kind of regrouping and we have a few good candidates. Two of them were not able to attend, so we're going to re-invite them, so hopefully they can attend this time. I've been compiling samples of other cities' comprehensive plans per Administrator Grounds' request. Seeing what the different components are, looking primarily at the table of contents and how they organize things, and seeing where they are in comparison to our old comprehensive plan from 10 years ago, which is lacking a number of things like an action plan. So we're gonna try to take some of these things and generify them and create sort of a Franken plan, and then write an RFP and run it by Brian, and then go forward and maybe invite a couple of organizations to provide us with some bids. Mid-Minnesota is probably one of the key organizations that are probably prominent in that bidding process, because they're probably going to be one of the most expensive. We talked about Sweet Lovin. Planning Commission reviewed and denied a request for rezoning of the Civic Center Drive project, which I don't know if you want to touch base on.
Well, we'll have a full packet in the council packet for that item. Right. We will add to the number of pages.
Okay.
In that particular council agenda.
And Sarah attended her first class of the 2019 Vision 2040 Leadership Cohort. So, congratulations.
It's a great group of people in that class.
It is. Yep.
And so, again, thus far, we have probably a few more permits. Not very many. Things are slowing down. Not the summer is coming to an end, but we're up to 399 permits. $47 million in value, and $43 million, but 90% of that value is currently on Tom and Jason's desk. We've got about 8.5% of that is in retail, 27% is institutional, 34% is industrial, and about 30% is multifamily housing. Caribou Cabin, which is this Legacy 2, came in. We don't have a permit request for it yet, but so they will be coming in for their second TIF, and those are some of the highlights. Do you have any questions about anything? That's
just curious on the search that you were talking about. I know you don't get all this information disclosed, but the reason the employee didn't come, did we learn any lessons that we can go for with a second search?
She just decided in reflection that her existing position was best, and decided to stay put.
So was this person working for another city then, or something?
Well, I can't. I don't think know if I can disclose that. But
those are delicate questions. That's what I try to keep mine vague.
I thought it was pretty good, vague. I mean, not vague enough.
No. But we always want to be better, improve on our process.
I think if you can debrief and figure out what we might have done wrong, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I just think just on second thought, she just felt it wasn't the right move for her.
Just as added information as far as building permits and increased valuation, we just got the information today from the county, and the increase for property values is 7% over last year, and that's split in two areas. One is new construction, and the other one is if your house or your property just went up in value because of the market. We just got the documents probably less than an hour ago, so tomorrow we'll have a better handle on how much is that of 7% is actually new construction versus everybody's property just going up due to inflation. But 7%, if inflation is 2%, that means we had 5% growth in taxable value. So what that means is if you increase your property taxes by 5% at the city level, everybody's property taxes would stay the same, in essence, because you're spreading out that 5% over an additional 5% of growth. So that's a good thing.
When people talk increasing your tax base, that's exactly what it is. And so many people don't understand what that means, but that's why you do the incentives for businesses to come, because you can even see from your percentages of where these dollars are being built. 64% of it is industrial and new housing, new multifamily housing. Getting that right.
And institutional.
The single family dwellings are almost immaterial.
Right. Yeah, there's only a handful literally every year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So putting out the shingle that we're open for business is a very good... I'm sorry, I interrupted.
So you'll see a more of a clearer breakdown as we go through the budgetary process, because the end result is as I kind of, you know, insinuated, was you increase your tax levy 5%, but property taxes could potentially go down. But that's a real simplistic view of the world, because the $100,000 to $120,000 houses might have went up 10%, because that's what they're selling for, mm-hmm. and the $300,000s stayed the same, because
they're not
selling for more than what, you know, they're assessed at. So what you're going to see is a shift. So you're going to, when people, you know, will want to talk to you as council members, they'll say, you know, my taxes went up. You have to say, well, how come? Did it go up because the value of your house went up $30,000? Or did it go up because we asked for more tax revenue? And they go, well, the county increased our house from 129 to 159. That's your tax increase. Because now you're paying taxes on $159,000, not on $129,000. And there's two or more moving parts to this thing. And so when you do get people who complain, you almost have to drill down and find out why. Why did your taxes go up? Because there's somebody over here that his taxes or her taxes did not go up. Their property didn't go up. Matter of fact, their taxes might have went down. It just depends on what neighborhood you're living in, what value home, and how it all comes together.
Any more discussion?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Adjourn.